This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next, bridges. The future of bridges, past problems with bridges. It's been nearly 3 months since the bridge over the Mississippi River in Minneapolis collapsed, killing 13 and injuring dozens of others. And earlier this month, the Minnesota Department of Transportation signed off on a design for a new bridge. The state hoped to start construction of the bridge by November 1st, but those plans will likely be delayed by a pending lawsuit. This hour, we're going to talk about the design with features that make new bridges safer, such as built-in sensors, super strong concrete, and what safety features were lacking in the collapsed steel bridge. Just what caused the Minnesota Bridge to collapse is under federal investigation. We'll hear about a University of Minnesota search for answers also. Then from Minneapolis to the rest of the country, we'll talk about why more than one bridge in four in the U.S., one in four is deemed structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. What does that mean, and what needs to be done to fix them? A bridge engineer for some of the most traveled bridges in the country will join us to talk about what kind of maintenance is necessary to keep a bridge strong, especially during a cold and icy winter. And if you travel over lots of bridges like we do here in the New York City area, you see constant maintenance happening on bridges. We'll talk about why you have to keep up with these bridges and keep maintaining them. And if you'd like to join our discussion, our number is 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK. You can always surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Also, Science City on Second Life. Find the avatar wearing the Science Friday t-shirt there, and you can ask a question that way. Let me introduce my guests. Henry Petrosky is a familiar voice on our broadcast. He's author of several engineering books. His most recent is The Toothpick, Technology and Culture. It's published this year. He is professor of civil engineering and professor of history at Duke University in Durham. He joins us today. Welcome back to the program, Dr. Petrosky.
Oh, thank you, Ira. It's good to be back.
You're welcome. Andrew Herman is a board member of the American Society of Civil Engineers and a partner at Hardesty in Hanover, a transportation consulting engineer firm here in New York, and he's here with us in our studios. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ira. It's a pleasure to be here.
I did get the pronunciation right, right?
Yes.
I never know when I see a name. Tachiro Okazaki is an assistant professor in the Department of Civil Engineering at the University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. He joins us from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul. Welcome to the program, Dr. Okazaki.
Thank you, Ira. Pleasure to be here.
Tell us about the search for the cause of the structure of the failure, Dr. Okazaki. What's happening there?
Yes, the National Transportation Safety Board, or the NTSB, is hard at work in the investigation. I understand that the NTSB might be at the site for another month. After that, they might take many of the bridge pieces to Washington, D.C. to do a very detailed forensic study.
Is there still some doubt why the bridge collapsed?
I do not believe anybody has come to a conclusion at this point yet.
Really?
Officially, what I hear is that they would release a finalized document with all the results after perhaps another year.
Are there any leading theories about what happened?
I can talk of four or five issues that we suspect to be contributing factors.
Mm-hmm.
If I could go down the list.
Sure.
One is that there are evidence that some of the bridge pieces were corroded, and that's a big issue in a cold climate like Minnesota, where we would need to use de-icing agents to accommodate the winter traffic.
Mm-hmm.
These agents would be aggressive in corroding the steel, practically rusting.
Right.
Another factor is fatigue cracking. This is a common concern for any steel bridge. But for the particular I-35W bridge, this is really attributed to the old welding technique that was used at the time.
Right.
A third factor might be the change in the design or the usage over the years. There were guardrails added along the 40-year use of the bridge, which may have added some weight to the structure.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth factor might be the construction that was going on at the time. They were basically repaving the surface. Some of the equipments may have caused severe vibration to the structure.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the repair work may have shifted how the load was distributed over the structure.
Now, this new bridge, this new bridge design that has being considered, how does it differ from the old bridge design? What are the benefits and the advantages to it?
It's been 40-something years since the old bridge was designed. They are using cutting-edge technology in construction. One of the main differences is that they're using concrete as the main material instead of steel. Not that concrete is a better material, but they're planning to use a very new construction technology, which is typically called the segmental box bridge construction. Mm-hmm. This means that the bridge would be composed of prefabricated pieces, which will be put together one by one, starting from the shore and building towards the river. And these pieces will be tied together by steel cables.
Mm-hmm. Henry Petrosky, what do you think of the new design? How does it compare? You've written a lot about bridges. Where does the cutting edge of bridge design these days?
Well, there are several cutting edges. In terms of concrete, I think what we're seeing proposed for Minneapolis, I guess it's more than proposed now, is at the cutting edge, as we've just heard. This kind of construction is very common these days, and you might say it's even been perfected. That's not to say there aren't potential problems. There have been examples of problems with bridges settling while under construction or being unbalanced. This kind of procedure usually requires some kind of balance toward the shore end for what's going over the water. There are also advances in bridge construction in the steel arena, too. There are bridges that are called cable-stay bridges, which are very popular and are often bridges that fall into the category of signature bridges, meaning that they give a distinctive character to the community in which with which they're associated. There's a new bridge up in Maine that is a very interesting example. It's called the Penobscot Narrows and Observatory. It's not only a bridge, but it also has an observatory at the top of one of the towers. That bridge is a combination of concrete and steel, in that the concrete roadway is held up by very visible steel cables, unlike the cables that will be hidden in the Minneapolis design. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, in the bridge in Maine, the cables are being attached by a new patented process that actually enables individual strands of the cables to be monitored and, if necessary, removed. This means that if any corrosion does develop in individual strands, that can be corrected by replacing those cables. Or one also has the ability to experiment with a real, live, living bridge that might, for example, admit new materials into the cables and see how they perform under real conditions, not laboratory conditions.
Andrew Herman, you're a civil engineer. You work at Hardesty in Hanover, a big consulting firm on bridges. What's happening in the bridge world, and how does this compare?
Well, the whole fact, the effect of using high-performance concrete and high-performance steel in the construction of new bridges.
What does that mean, high-performance, versus what I'm walking on the sidewalk?
High-performance steel will have a more ductility. It will be able to take more fatigue, have larger fatigue life and resistance to details that in the past may have caused cracks in bridges.
Mm-hmm. And are you familiar with the new Minneapolis design?
No, not really. I understand it's a segmental that's been used for many years.
Where would we have seen something like that around the country that would look something like a segmental? Is that what they have in Florida when you see these causeways sort of bridges?
You see a lot of these flowing concrete bridges. They're boxes that just go straight. There's a lot of curvature, very flowing appearance, very aesthetically pleasing-looking type of bridge. Mm-hmm. One thing that on the earlier topic on the collapse, one of the things that the FHA did, I guess within days of the collapse, is they put together a computer model of the original bridge based on the original design drawings down at FHWA's Turner Fairbank Highway Research Center. And this lets them start doing some simulations on the bridge. They can take members out. They can create deficiencies, different loadings, and hopefully that will speed up the determination of what went wrong with the bridge.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255. Let's see if we can See if we can get a phone caller in. Let's go to Sid in Hatteras Island, North Carolina. Sid, you get on and off by a bridge?
Yes. The island that I live on is served by a single roadway that crosses the Oregon Inlet, and that bridge is nearing the end of its lifespan. The engineers who work for the State Transportation Agency first proposed a shorter bridge, and then after reviewing erosion, decided to build to propose a longer bridge that would avoid the high erosion area for the roadway that came off the bridge. At that point, the politicians, certain local politicians, got involved and raised objections, and now we're back with a short bridge again. What role does politics play in bridge design, and when people are thinking about bridge designs, are they only looking at the next 10 or 20 years planning frame, or are they looking at what could happen over the next 50 to 75? Because mm-hmm. If we take that more long-term perspective, at least on Hatteras, they're proposing a short bridge that the roadway that it ends at is going to be in the ocean.
The bridge to nowhere, as we've heard something.
Well, it's a bridge to some important villages, including where I live, but it will be a bridge to a cul-de-sac if we have a bad storm.
Hmm. Let me ask, anybody want to touch it? Herman? Mr. Herman?
Yeah, a number of the national program sometimes has earmarks, as we all know, and occasionally there are some political decisions made that would direct funds for bridges to such bridges to nowhere.
Yeah. Henry, any politics always involved in building bridges, right?
Well, that's right, exactly. The example I mentioned in Maine with the observatory, one of the main reasons the observatory was incorporated into that bridge, a rather unique feature, is mainly political. The bridge was being built because there was another bridge right beside it now that was a historic bridge. It's called the Waldo Hancock Bridge. It was a suspension bridge designed and built by David Steinman back in the 1930s. And the community had come to really love this bridge. They felt it was their bridge. However, and this is where maintenance inspection is so important, during a routine inspection of the cables of that suspension bridge, it was found that there was a great deal of corrosion. And as a result, it was necessary to restrict traffic, and it became evident that if there was going to be a bridge at that location, they were going to have to build a new one very, very quickly. But, of course, political opposition of various kinds can often sidetrack the process, as we're seeing potentially going to happen in Minneapolis. So the Maine Department of Transportation played a key role in really brokering the situation between the political elements and the engineering elements, and talked about this observatory. It was motivated by the existence of an observatory at the top of the Washington Monument. The towers of this bridge are modeled after those of the Washington Monument, and that's done because some of the stone in the Washington Monument came from a local quarry.
Right.
But anyway, by promising the people that there would be this observatory, which would be considered a unique feature and also a potential tourist attraction, the opposition to the bridge became less and less. And right now, the bridge is open. It's gotten rave reviews. The observatory has gotten rave reviews. The old bridge, rusting bridge, sits beside it, and its fate is still undetermined. Mm. There are those who would like to save it as a historical feature. But that's going to be very costly. So politics, again, mm-hmm. is going to play an important role because it's very unlikely that the money to preserve that bridge and restore it would come from anywhere but tax money.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flato with Andrew Herman, Tachiro Okazaki, and Henry Petrosky. Tachiro, there were public hearings in Minnesota, were there not, asking people what they wanted or their reactions?
Yes. The design firm for this, responsible for this new bridge, which is FIG, Bridge Engineering, they had a public hearing or a community meeting involving between 80 to 100 stakeholders to discuss about some of the design features of the new bridge. Mm-hmm. And, well, I was fortunate enough to to listen to a part of the discussion. I wish I could be there for the whole time, but they discussed, for example, what shape would the bridge pier look like? By bridge pier, I mean the columns that support the deck. Mm. And there was also discussion about options of what color the bridge should look like.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask a quick question before we go to the break. Jeff Main in Second Life says, what's the difference with bridges where they let them rust versus bridges that have to be painted every couple of years? Is it different steel, different? Mr. Herman, what's the difference?
They've engineered a type of steel that they call weathering steel, and it actually develops a layer of rust, a patina on the outside that seals the steel in. And in the correct environment in terms of drying, wetting and drying, it will actually protect the bridge instead of paint.
Mm-hmm. Also, are stone bridges intrinsically better than steel bridges, or is too hard a generalization?
There are many different bridges for different reasons.
All right, we're going to take a short break. Come back and talk lots more about bridges. So we're going to bring on a bridge expert, someone who works here in the New York City area. I go over the Tappan Zee Bridge and other bridges around here almost just about every week. And we're going to talk about what does it take to maintain a bridge. I mean, bridges have to be really – you see the maintenance people on them all the time. I'm sure by the time you're done painting it, you have to start over again at the beginning. So stay with us. We'll be back. Let me tell you who my experts are. Andrew Herman, who is board member of the American Society of Civil Engineers and partner at the Hardesty in Hanover, a transportation consulting engineer firm in New York. Taichiro Okazaki, assistant professor in the Department of Civil Engineering at University of Minnesota in Minneapolis. Henry Petrosky, author of The Toothpick, Technology and Culture, published this year by Knopf. He's the professor of civil engineering and professor of history at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. And when we come back, Christine Edwards is going to join us. She is the bridge project coordinator for the Tappan Zee Bridge Project, former bridge management engineer for the Lower Hudson Valley at the New York State Department of Transportation. She's going to talk to us about bridge maintenance and tell you why those bridges, and especially the expansion joints, have to be maintained if you don't maintain them. And, you know, it's winter's coming up. Ice, salt, what does that do to a bridge? Your questions are number 1-800-989-8255. Second Life, go to Science City. And you can ask, look for some avatar with a Science Friday t-shirt. We'll take your questions. Don't go away. We'll be right back after this short break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note for Monday's program. Coming up on Monday, Georgia's state climatologist says that while people pay attention to hurricanes and earthquakes, a drought sneaks up on you. Join Neil Conan and his guests on Monday when they talk about a look at slow motion disasters. Plus the opinion page. That's on with Neil Conan on Talk of the Nation on Monday. This hour, we're talking about bridges. And I want to bring on another guest. Christine Edwards is bridge project coordinator for the Tappan Zee Bridge Project, former bridge management engineer at the Lower Hudson Valley, for the Lower Hudson Valley at the New York State Department of Transportation. Welcome to the program, Ms. Edwards.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
You're heading up a project on the Tappan Zee Bridge, which I take at least twice, three times a week, and that's a bridge just north of New York City and the Hudson River in Nyack, and it's the same kind of bridge as the I-35W bridge in Minneapolis. And does it have the similar kinds of problems?
Well, the Tappan Zee Bridge has elements that are similar, but it's really quite a different structure than the I-35 bridge in Minneapolis. It has some of its spans are under deck trusses, but they're much shorter and much, not as deep as the ones in I-35.
I imagine that I know the governor of New York called for an inspection of all of its deck truss bridges after the Minneapolis collapse. I imagine that would have been going on all over the country, a reevaluation.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. He asked us to reassure the public about the safety of the structures. He asked us to go out and take a look at them again, and we did. Now, across the state, there were 49 structures that we reviewed, and they were all found to be safe and adequate to carry the traffic.
but they get these unusual ratings that make us think that they're not safe.
Yeah, anything that's rated less than a 5, we call them deficient in New York State. Mm-hmm. And all that means is there's some elements that need some work done on them. It has nothing to do with the safety of the structure.
What kind of rating did the Tappan Zee get?
The Tappan Zee bridge rating was about a 3.
Whoa.
That's
a long way from a 5.
And that's why a few years ago they decided that they really needed to look at a project to resolve some of the structural needs of the Tappan Zee Bridge.
Isn't that worse than the rating that the Minnesota Bridge got?
I'm not sure. We have a different rating system in New York. We use a New York State rating system that Minneapolis, of course, doesn't use.
Andrew Herman, any comment?
The fact that it was rated a 3 is why the New York State Thruway and New York State DOT watches and inspects the Tappan Zee Bridge so frequently. They always have people out there. They're watching the decks. They have crews out there that if there's any potholes, they try to take care of them right away. They have people on the steel. That's one of the things. If a bridge is rated at a lower number, that is what pushes the owner to keep looking at it and trying to find out if there's anything happening so they can repair it quickly.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Edwards, what do we have to do for the winter? Let's talk about, as you say, we always see people on these bridges. What are they doing? I mean, what kind of maintenance does a bridge have to have? And especially now in the wintertime, what extra kinds of things do you have to look out for?
Well, in the winter, of course, there's always snow removal and salt and icing. And, you often see the signs and say, bridge freezes first. But in the wintertime, the joints get clogged.
Let's stop with the joints for a second and say,
Why?
What's so important about the joints?
Well, the joints allow the structure to expand and contract, relieve its stresses, so to speak.
And if they stay clogged?
There's a couple problems that we have with joints. If they freeze the structure, then it causes stresses in areas that we really would prefer not to have stresses. The other problem is they tend to leak, and some of our worst conditions are under the deck joints.
Mm-hmm. And leaking means what?
Leaking means rust and corrosion and deterioration, and repairs are going to be necessary.
I guess if the joints are clogged, then the bridge pushes against the shoreline or whatever is holding it in on the shore instead of just expanding itself in mid-span.
It's a little more complicated than that, but it because the stresses are relieved through the structure. But yeah,
mm-hmm. Henry Petrosky.
Yes.
What happens when bridges aren't maintained well?
Well, obviously they can deteriorate to the point of near collapse or even actual collapse, and obviously that's something that nobody wants to see happen. Mm-hmm. Mostly, this deterioration takes place slowly by human standards, and inspecting once every year or two is usually enough to catch warning signs that are really evidence that something mm-hmm. more serious has to be done than just looking mm-hmm. at the bridge and checking it every now and then.
Andrew Harmon?
Well, if you get any debris on the bridge or ice or freezing up of the drains, that could inhibit the deck drainage, and the standing water could promote deck deterioration. Water and de-icers corrode steel reinforcement, causing spalling. That's where pieces of the concrete break out.
That understructure, that steel understructure, has to be protected at all costs because that's the bridge. You're not going to make a new part of that, right?
Right. If the de-icing agents get down onto the steel structure, they can accelerate rusting. The other thing is that if there's debris underneath, even bird nests, that can hold moisture and de-icing agents against the steel and advance the corrosion.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Edwards, would I be correct in saying, was I correct in saying that when you paint some of these bridges, I'm talking about some of these big suspension bridges like the Throgs Neck, the Whitestone, the other large suspension bridges we have in New York and I'm sure out in California and other places, that just about when you're done, you have to start over again?
Well, just about when you're done, we should be starting over again.
We should be.
Yeah. We don't. Unfortunately, painting is one of those things that we don't do as much as we should.
And that's because of budgetary reasons.
That's because of budgetary reasons. That's correct.
Yeah. And people just and that's true, Mr. Herman, of all the bridges, I imagine. How we take care of our bridges in this country is just insufficient.
One of the problems is lack of maintenance. We should really be putting money into maintenance of bridges because that will prolong their lives. One of the problems with the way we fund our repairs and for bridges is that the federal government doesn't compensate for maintenance. It does compensate once a bridge gets bad enough to be rehabilitated or replaced.
So you let it deteriorate long enough so you can get the money out of the pocket and you can pull it out.
Sad.
Yeah. Ms. Edwards, do you have a fear, I mean, of some catastrophe happening if we don't take care of these bridges?
I have a lot of confidence in our inspection program. It's the best in the nation, in my opinion. We have professional engineers that look at a bridge every 2 years. If there's a concern, if there's a concern or a low rating, we look at it every year. And these are professional engineers. There's only two states, I believe, in the union that require professional engineers to look at all of their bridges.
Mm-hmm.
And we have that in New York. It gives you a lot of confidence.
Mm-hmm. Well, Dr. Okazaki, then how can how do we have a collapse if engineers are looking at bridges all the time? How do we have one that has a catastrophic collapse to it?
I personally believe that there may have been some or unfortunate coincidence of many contributing factors coming together to cause something like the I-35W collapse.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens rarely. It's very unfortunate that it happened at all.
Okay, let's go to the phones. Let's go to Steve in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Steve. Hi, are you there, Steve? Steve in Charlotte. No? I guess he's... Mr. Herman, did you want to comment?
Yeah, I'd like to pick up on one of the things that Christine said, that New York is one of the two states in the nation that have PE bridge inspectors. That's something that the American Society of Civil Engineers feels very strongly about. The pre-inspection evaluation, the actual inspection ratings and condition evaluation should be performed by licensed professional engineers experienced in bridge design and inspection. They need to have the expertise to know the load paths, the critical members, the fatigue-prone details, and past potential areas of distress in the particular type of structure being inspected. And we believe that professional engineers with the proper training and past experience are the ones that should be doing these inspections.
So you're saying only two states, did I hear you correctly, require professional engineers?
That's what Christine said. I'm just picking up on it because the National Bridge inspection standards have several levels of people who could qualify to be a bridge inspector. Mm-hmm. The first one being a licensed professional engineer, but then they have others that may qualify without the education or license by experience.
As I said at the beginning, more than one in four U.S. bridges are rated as structurally deficient, functionally obsolete, and that's an improvement from the previous years, isn't it?
It is an improvement. Over the last number of years, if we go back, ASCE has put out a report card for a number of years.
Mm-hmm. And the situation is worse when you look at urban bridges, right?
In urban bridges, it goes to one in three instead of one in four, structurally deficient or functionally obsolete. And if you look at over the years, yes, we've been bringing down the number of deficient bridges, but if you look at the last couple of years, that rate of reduction mm-hmm. is decreasing. So we're either leveling off or stopping our improvement in reducing the number of deficient bridges in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Henry, do the municipalities get this? Do they understand this, or they just throw up their hands and say, we don't have enough money?
Yeah. Well, I expect that their engineers understand it.
Yeah.
Whether the politicians do is another question. It would depend on how long the election cycle is in some cases, and whether they think they can, you know, get by before something drastic happens. These surprise bridge collapses tend to occur after long periods when nothing major, no major disaster mm-hmm. Happens. There develops a sort of a sense of complacency. People can rationalize that, well, you know, bridges are built to be strong. They're built by competent engineers. It costs money to inspect them or to maintain them. We know that they're over-designed and right. they're not collapsing. We can stretch our budget a little by skipping some maintenance, skipping some painting, skipping some inspections.
Mm-hmm. Andrew Herman, you've testified before Congress, correct?
Yes.
On these issues? Are lawmakers taking this seriously?
I had the fortune to testify for ASCE before Congressman Oberstar's Committee on Transportation and Infrastructure, and he is actually wanting to introduce a bill on the National Highway System Bridge Reconstruction Initiative, where he's wanting to increase the gas tax to fund elimination of structurally deficient bridges on the national highway system. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a small portion of the overall bridges in the country, but the national highway system is an important part and takes a lot of the traffic in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
One of the points of his legislation will be that there'll be no earmarks for that.
I mentioned before that some of the newer designs have sensors in the bridges. What kind of sensors are we talking about?
As they cast concrete or they put the steel up, they can put monitoring devices to indicate cracks or deflections or movements in various members, which then have to be monitored.
Christine Edwards, sometimes on the program I give scientists the blank check question. I'm going to give it to you as an engineer.
Oh, thanks.
Now, you'll like this question.
Okay.
Question is, if you had a blank check, now you could have as much money as you needed to do the kind of bridge engineering, maintenance, whatever, on the bridges around your area and around, you know, I'll expand it to other engineers listening. How much money would you need and what would you do with it if you could had an unlimited budget?
That's an excellent question. It would be a lot of money. I wish I had the number in front of me. Because in New York State, and I'll speak to New York State bridges because that's what I'm most familiar with, 58% of our bridges were built before 1970. So they're getting up there in years. And they're getting older, and they're getting tired. And they require a lot more maintenance. So, and we actually have programmed more maintenance work into our it's taking more and more of our budget. Mm-hmm. I wish I had the number to tell you how much money that would be.
All right, let me interrupt and remind everybody, this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Well, let's say you had all that money. Where would you put you talk about maintenance. Give me some specifics of what kind of maintenance we're talking about.
Well, we do a lot of joint replacements. Joints are very important. We do, you know, and we're constantly looking for better technology, better joint systems that we can use. When we do deck replacements, we try to eliminate joints when we can, when the structure can support it. Paint is always a good thing because it protects the good steel that you have. And that's really what we key on. We key on safety issues, railing. Make sure the railing's up to date because it maintains the safety for the traveling public.
Mm-hmm. And you have enough inspectors then. You wouldn't need to spend that money on hiring more inspectors.
Now, we have an inspection program that we combine both state inspectors with consultant inspectors. And so the pool is rather large.
Mm-hmm. And I guess if you had an unlimited budget, you'd just build a whole new bridge.
Where that makes sense, you know, we have a lot of historical structures that we're rather fond of. That we would hold on to and just rehabilitate. But when it makes sense, we would replace them.
Andrew Herman?
Ira, you mentioned how much money would you need. During the Safety Lou debate, that's the bill that Congress puts together for maintenance of highways and bridges, it was estimated that $375 billion was needed for the surface transportation program, but only $286 billion was authorized in the law. So you can see the shortfall of $80 to $90 billion right there.
Wow, that's about 9 months in Iraq and Afghanistan. Isn't it? You're optimistic, Christine Edwards, about the safety staying tip top.
For example, if a bridge becomes unsafe, we close it. I do believe that our bridges that remain open will always be safe because of our inspection program. However, you know, if we want to keep our infrastructure moving, then we're going to have to invest some money.
Yeah. So we should be happy when we see all that construction work on the
bridges. That's exactly right.
We shouldn't worry. We shouldn't be cursing out the traffic.
That's right. Be kind to those guys.
All right. Thank you very much for taking time to talk with us. I want to thank Christine Edwards, Bridge Project Coordinator for the Tappan Zee Bridge Project, former Bridge Management Engineer for the Lower Hudson Valley at the New York State Department of Transportation and the New York Department of Transportation in Tarrytown. Tichiro Okazaki,
yes.
Assistant Professor in the Department of Civil Engineering, University of Minnesota, thank you for joining us today. Henry Petrosky, good luck on the book, The Toothpick, Technology and Culture, published this year by Knopf. Thank you for taking time to be with us.
And thank you.
You're welcome. Andrew Herman, board member of the American Society of civil engineers and partner at Hardesty in Hanover, right here in New York. Thanks for coming into the studio.
Thank you, Ira.
This program is produced by Karen Vergoth and senior producer Ned Heiss. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. Shuman Ma is our intern fellow. And Josh Rogerson, our technical director, is manning the controls today. We had remote help from engineers Cobble Smith and James Todd in Durham and Jenny Lubke in Minneapolis. If you'd like to write or send your letters to Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Also, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. We've got new videos up there. Flora's putting them out. We want your videos. Also, we are podcasting and blogging and also meeting new people on Second Life. You can visit folks with the Science Friday t-shirts there. Have a great weekend. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.